And when you examine the experience of these emotions per se, what is motivation? What is the motivation for love? What prompts love? What motivates love? My I is attracted to a certain human being. Your existence strikes chords in my soul, in my heart, in my identity. Whether naturally, like siblings, or parents and children, or unnaturally. It's not innately, it's like two friends, or a very close teacher and a student, or two people who really admire and care for each other. Why do I love you? Because you're appealing to me. Emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, physically, whatever. We're not getting into where and what and when, but the bottom line is you're appealing to me. My eye goes crazy over you. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is the nature of love. There is a shidduch here. There is an act of bond between two parties. When I fear somebody, even on the most basic levels of fear, what's the cause for it? What motivates it? What motivates that emotion? What motivated that emotion was not my own identity, that you were appealing to me. Quite on the contrary. What creates the element of fear is the fact that I'm being not considered with. My reality is not being reckoned with. There's something more powerful, higher than me, above me, that strikes a fear in me. In love, the foundation is the one who loves. He creates, he's the motivator, she is the motivator that creates and defines the love. And here it's the other way around. The foundation, the source is the one whom I fear. He creates and strikes within me that sense of fear. Take, for example, a servant. What's the cause for the relationship? What's the motor? What's the engine that fuels the relationship? That the master is appealing to the servant? It might be that the master is appealing to the servant, but even if that's the case, that's not what makes him a servant. That makes him an admirer. It makes him a student. It makes him a pupil. It doesn't make him a servant. What makes one a servant is not that the master appeals to him, that his identity is being involved here and being reckoned with and being tailored to and being custom made to. Rather, what makes me his servant? Because he is my master and I must serve him. I don't choose to serve him because I feel good about serving him and having a relationship with him. I'm compelled to serve him because he is my master and I am a servant. And that's really the reason why slavery has been nullified in almost every country in the world, because who are you to dominate the I? Love has not been nullified. Not yet. Hasn't been yet nullified, because I can choose whom I love. But a servant doesn't choose his master. It doesn't have to be appealing to him. It really doesn't have to do with him. I don't care who you are. Who are you to dominate the I? You have no rights. Even in Torah law, where there are different halachas connected to servants, everybody knows that there are very powerful and stringent conditions that govern the relationship between a master and a servant. We spoke about it in the 39th chapter of Tanya. There's the famous Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Chav, Kol HaKoina Eved, Kilu Koina Adin La'atzmai. If you purchase a servant, it's like you're purchasing a master. Because the laws that govern the relationship between a master and a servant in Torah are very strict. But essentially, that's why the master can demand from the servant to do even things that he's uninterested, or he doesn't want to, because the foundation is not, I want, I don't want. Really, it's irrelevant. That's not what created the relationship, and therefore, it's not limited to what he or she wants or doesn't want. It's dependent. He does what the master wants. But this is not just the motivation, the initial motivation that creates the relationship in love and that creates the relationship in fear and awe. It's much more than that. Chassidus says, even when I love you, and this is already a more subtle idea, even when I love you, at the core of that love, of that experience, is my love to myself. Your reality is enhancing me. Your reality is assisting me. I love myself. And as an extension and as a byproduct of that love is my love towards you. And that's why the form that every love takes on in this world, every single love takes on one form. I crave to have something. Love is I'm gravitating to something. I want something. I'm not looking for you. I'm looking to have you. Now, sometimes this is conspicuously evident. That I'm looking to have you even if it actually harms you. I really don't care about you. The Mittler Rebbe, the son of the Alter Rebbe, in his Sefer Torah Chaim and Shmoyz gives an example. People say, I love food. I love this particular food. So what do you do to the food? You nullify it. Very interesting love. They say about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, right? He was once walking in the street and he saw two Yidden eating chicken. And one Jew turns to the other Jew and he says, I love this chicken. So Rabbi Saul Salanta tells him, excuse me for mixing into the conversation, but if you would have loved this chicken, you wouldn't have had him slaughtered, so you should be able to eat him. Or her, right? Or her, I should say. You don't love this chicken or this rooster. You love yourself. And this taste, the taste of the chicken is extremely appealing to you. So let's set the record straight. I guess if they would be living today, they wouldn't have to give an example of food. They can even give an example of human beings, right? Sometimes people are in love with other people, even though that love equals the destruction of the second human being. So if you really love that human being, leave her alone. Or leave him alone, because it's destructive. But you don't care. Why don't you care if you're so in love? You don't care about that person. You want that person. Because you love yourself. One second. There was once, when I was young, I remember they told a story. There was once a Jewish girl who wanted to marry a non-Jew. And they agreed to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe before they actually went along with the marriage. So he saw them each individually. So, as sometimes happens, the Jewish girl he couldn't convince out of it. But the non-Jew he convinced out of it. Very vividly. I mean, convinced him. The guy said, you're right, Rabbi, it's a wrong thing to marry her. And I will break it up. I just have one problem. I can't. I'm in love with her. I can't. If I would be able to, I would. It's the right thing. But I'm just totally in love with this human being. What am I supposed to do? And he told him then, he said, if you really love do you love her or do you love yourself? He said, I love this person. Would you do anything with this person? I would die for this person. I would die for this person. He says, would you kill this person? Kill this person? You're killing her. Ultimately, history will record that you caused her life disaster, her children disaster, her family disaster. You severed her way. You severed her from her people and from who she is, and you're causing disaster to yourself. But that's what you're going to be doing. But very often, the guy broke it off. Because if he understood vividly that it's disaster for her, then he understood. So love, sometimes this just brings out that often we want another person at the expense of that person. But Chassidus says even more. Even if it's a truer love where I will never do something to harm the person I love because I really want their good and I crave for them and I want to be close to them, essentially at the core, at the quintessence of this craving is not the other person, but it's a craving that I should have the other person. And this is not a tragedy. This is what love means. All love means I love myself. And that's why Chassidus says, when you hate yourself, you can't love anybody. If the I is abominable, if my life is worthless, insignificant, valueless, I can't love even people that are naturally I love. Because it ultimately stems from a certain sense of I. My I has a dignity, I cherish it, and all love comes from that. If I totally don't love myself, I can't really love somebody else. The Mittler Rebbe writes this clearly. In Teres Chaim and Shmos.
This sense, the sphere of punishment is the same concept. It's on, you
Yep. Are you right? Well, we're getting to this. No.
Rambam, it says that kina is for a lot of people. I want my friend to shag. I want him to do well. I want him to get into the high shir. Ask that I get into the high shir also.
Okay.
So it must take years. How does someone get past that?
Well, the bottom line of everything we're talking about is that we have to work on ourselves. The Yiddishkeit is about working on your personality and refinement and so forth. You know, that's the bottom line on all levels and so forth. But let's try not to get off our subject. In awe and fear, on the other hand, this element obviously doesn't exist. The same is true in a third element, in the actual experience of love and the experience of fear. What is the nature of the emotion of love? What is the nature of the emotion of fear? Love enhances me. Fear denies me. Love elevates me. Fear suppresses me. Love expands me. Fear diminishes me. That's what fear means. I recoil. I'm in dread. I'm diminished, I become nullified, and so forth. Love broadens the human being. Love permeates the human being. Fear overwhelms the human being. And this is basically the foundation of the relationship between a master and a servant. What is a servant? A servant is not enhanced or broadened by the master. A servant is subservient to the master. A servant doesn't have an eye. That's the experience of a servant. We read yesterday Parashas Chayisara. The first words of Eliezer when they asked him to talk were of Ayoimar. Eliezer said, "Eved Avram Anaichi." I'm the servant of Avram. He went on to discuss all of his major accomplishments, but the foundation was Eved Avram Anaichi. And it's interesting that in the whole section his name is not mentioned once, because that's what a servant is. The Gemara, everybody knows, there's a famous a very interesting Rashba. I don't want to get too much off the subject. The Gemara in Kiddushin discusses the relationship of a servant to a master, discussing a debate: if yesh kinyan le'eved b'loy rabbi, you ain't kinyan le'eved b'loy rabbi. Can a servant acquire something without that thing going to its master automatically? And the Gemara concludes that ein kinyan le'eved b'loy rabbi, whatever the servant acquires automatically goes to the master. And the Gemara there cites one opinion that even if the donor contributes a sum of money to the servant with a condition that this money, almenas, she'ein le'ladin klum, with the condition that the master gets nothing. So there's one opinion there that the condition is null and the money goes straight to the master. Even though he made this condition before he gave over the money, I'm giving this to you only with the condition that it's not going to your boss. So the money goes to you and it goes to your boss. So the Rashba explains the Kiddushin Daf Chav Gimel Amid Beis. What's the reason for this? He says it's synonymous with somebody giving you a sum of money. He says, I'm giving you this sum of money with one condition, that you shouldn't acquire it. And he gives you the money. So obviously the condition is null. Why? A condition is valid only if it enhances the essential dynamic. Right, but if the condition is with retracting from it, so the condition is automatically nullified. So don't give him your money. So this is what the Rishba says here also. It's not pshat, the money goes to the servant and then automatically it goes from the servant to the master. It never went to the servant. The very identity of the servant is, so to speak, part and parcel of the master. So when he says, I'm giving it to the servant, al-manas, with the condition that it shouldn't go to the master, that condition is nullified according to one opinion, and it automatically goes to the master. But what does this bring out? This brings out the nature of the relationship between a servant and a master. He doesn't belong to himself. There is no I. And again, that's why slavery today is deemed, for justified reasons, something very negative. Because why should my I be taken away by you? Who are you to take away my I? So there are three differences between love and fear. A, in the motivation. In love, the motivation, the source is the I. In fear, the source is the you. That's what creates the relationship. B, in the very experience. The love to you is really a love to myself. And C, in the expression, in the nature of the experience, love enhances my identity. A fear nullifies my identity. As in a servant, where the master overwhelms him. The definition of a servant is that I have no I. My I is a conduit for you. Is a servant for you. I'll say one more part. There was a... There was a Hasidic discourse of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe that was set on Rosh Hashanah Tafresh Pei Zayin, Rosh Hashanah 1926. And on the second page there, I think it is, there's an expression in Yiddish. He talks about serving Hashem, and in Yiddish he says, the unan eved farschlaft nisht. A servant never oversleeps. He's always up when he has to be up. And I wondered, what was the reason? He sometimes does express himself in Yiddish, but it seemed that there was something there from the flow that he expresses himself right there in Yiddish. It seemed a little bit enigmatic in the structure and the context of that discourse. So I heard the story. There was a story behind it. The mikveh in that city, it was in Leningrad, or the old St. Petersburg. The mikveh of that city was a far distance from the Beis Medrash, from the shul. It was like an hour and a half walk. Now the Rebbe notified him that Rosh Hashanah in the morning, he's going to say a maimer, like 8 o'clock. And there was a chassid, his name was Reb Nissen Nemenov. He was a famous Chabad chassid. To miss the discourse, he would never miss a discourse of the Rebbe on Rosh Hashanah. But not to go to the mikveh on Rosh Hashanah and before the maimer, before the discourse, that's also impossible. But going to the mikveh, coming back from the mikveh is a 3-hour ordeal, right? The maimer starting at 8. So he decided he'll wake up before dawn and walk. So he'd have to wake up at least at 4 and so forth, say brachas. He woke up a little late, a few minutes late. So walking there, walking back, he came a few minutes after 8. And right when he walked into the room, the Rebbe was sitting at his table, surrounded by hundreds of people. Suddenly he said, "Unan evet fashloft nisht." And a servant doesn't oversleep. A lover does oversleep. A servant, an evet, doesn't fall oversleep. Because there's no why. There's no why to oversleep. So this, now we come to understand what Alter Rebbe is saying. This is what Alter Rebbe says here. V'atayra amra v'avadetem es Hashem alakech. V'oysoy sa'avoydu. The Torah, it's very, very rich words. Hatayra amra, the Torah says v'avadetem es Hashem alakech. The Torah wants avoydas evet. You should be a servant of Hashem. You should serve Hashem. Va'avada them like a servant serves a master. A slave, a servant, is negative sometimes between people. Again, even in Torah law, the laws of slavery are very stringent. In fact, slavery among people was an external phenomenon. Everything we discussed about slavery was true, but it was external. It's not like the servant really nullified his internal eye to the master. His internal eye was overwhelmed by the master. It wasn't like a conscious nullification and so forth that really permeated him. The master struck terror in the heart of the servant. But when the relationship to Hashem is something different. And here again we come to the same idea. There are very many ways in which one can relate with Hashem. We can relate to Hashem as a child to a father, as a child to a mother, as a wife to a husband, as a bride to a groom, as a teacher, as a student to a teacher, as a sheep to a shepherd. as a sister to a brother, and finally as a servant to a master. And the foundation of the difference between all of these relationships is the above mentioned difference. In all of the other relationships, I connect to Hashem because I find Him appealing. I love Him, and I want to connect to Him and with Him. He appeals to my identity. And the exclusive means to connect Him is through Torah, mitzvahs, prayer, as explained many times in Tanya. And therefore I go about learning Torah and observing mitzvahs and living a spiritual life. But the foundation is the I. And in all of these relationships, there is something amazing, beautiful, awesome. It's extraordinary. But there's one thing missing. I'm not serving Hashem. Even in the deepest level of love, the very definition of love means I'm serving myself. There's nothing bad about it. But I'm not serving Hashem. There is self-actualization. Even if I understand that the purpose is to commit myself to Hashem, but that's the purpose that I am committed to and I find is my ultimate self-actualization, surrender, nullification, and so forth. What it means to serve Hashem is not because He appeals to me, not because His presence and His identity is exciting to me, not because He's very meaningful to me. No. Because I don't belong to myself. Because I belong to Him. This awareness, emotion, or at least awareness is what the Alter Rebbe is addressing here. The notion of nothingness in His presence. I daven, not because I'm in an exalted mood. I do a mitzvah, not because it makes me feel good. This is true, it's great. But that's not avodas Hashem. Not so that I should gain something, not that I should enhance myself, become a better person. Not even because of the fact that I love Him and I want to connect to Him. I just want Him. But because I'm His servant in order to serve Hashem. If I love Him and that's why I do a mitzvah, the I is very present there. In the motivation, in the expression, and in the core experience. Have I ever served Hashem? This is what the Zohar is saying. The foundation of the axe is the yoke that's on the ox. This has to be the foundation of the Jew. And as the Zohar puts it, a slave can't even experience this. That's why most mitzvahs are not applicable to slaves. Because in order to experience this year that Alter Rebbe is talking about, you have to be free. I have to be free to serve Hashem. When I'm free, I can become aware of the fact that Hashem is the truth of reality, the reality of reality, the reality of my reality. My purpose in life is to be His servant. Not because I'm His partner, not because we're friends, not because I love Him, not because I admire Him, not because He's appealing and I rejoice in Him, but because I'm His servant. And that's a whole other type of experience. And this is what Alter Rebbe is saying here. It's also his advice to all types of problems that Jews have in their relationship with Hashem. And the most common problem is, I think many of us have this almost every day, I'm not in the mood of it. I'm not in love with this guy. I'm not interested in him, I'm not in the mood, I'm actually frustrated. Bored, frustrated, even resentful, or at least numb and cold. If the foundation of our relationship is the I, so when the I is not present in the relationship, not intellectually, not emotionally, not psychologically, there are a lot of problems. Zogdal Terebbe, the foundation, the beginning, the core and the root of Yiddishkeit is not I, is Hashem. Why should I care where I am? Do I feel? Don't I feel? How do I feel? Am I in the mood? Why am I not in the mood? I should have been in the mood. I'm His servant and He's my master. The Alter Rebbe says, forget about the I. Serve Hashem. To serve Hashem, to serve Hashem, not to serve yourself. So when that mood comes into you, say, Va'atayra amra va'avadetem es Hashem alakech. It's not connected to me. It doesn't have to enhance me and permeate me and develop me and make me feel good and motivate me. I don't have to find myself there. I'm His servant. How did David HaMelech put it? Ana Hashem ki ani avdecha. I'm your servant. And that's the beginning, the root, and the source. Not me, but my responsibilities. Not what I love, but what my obligations are. Not what I want from Hashem, but what He wants from me. And the famous euphemism, right? Don't ask what they can do for you, ask what you can do for them. It's also, parenthetically, it's also a very healing thought. It's a healing thought because this means that at any moment, at any given moment, notwithstanding circumstances, mood, experiences, I become aware that Hashem chose me right now to be His servant, and therefore all other problems, what type of value do they have in the presence of this truth? What do you mean? And yeah, that's good. Pitachta lemeser, an Hashem kani avdacha pitachta lemeser. You released all my bondages. I'm your servant. So notwithstanding wherever I am, but right now I have the opportunity to serve you. So if you're like in the middle of Shemayna Esra, and major, major stress and burdens go straight into our mind, which are very common to make their way into our mind precisely when we begin Shemayna Esra. You know those days when you start Shemayna Esra, and you begin davening, and apparently you think you're thinking about the words. And then like after a few minutes, you see you're holding by Sim Shalom, and you say, whoa, that was fast. Who did this, and when did he do this? I see nobody relates to this. Right? I mean, we're not Reb Aaron Karlinas. Reb Aaron Karlinas, he said, HaMelech, there was a Melech there. I mean, we don't live like that. Are we capable? And I doubt it. So, reality has it, as Alter Rebbe put it in chapter 28, that when you start davening, you make sure to fit the best time to think about your appointments. The best time to think about the problematic telephone calls you have to make. There's no better time than the middle of Shemayna Esra. The Yetzirah makes sure. You come up with the best decisions then, the best planning. Everything works out right then. From Baruch Atah till Sim Shalom is the most opportune time for all that. So at that moment, right, the Jew awakes and he's not there. And that itself creates a depression and a frustration and resentment. Zogdal Rebbe, Vatay Amra Vavadatim. Right now become a servant. Regardless of where you are and where you should be and where you will be and where you could have been. Vatay Amra, now be a servant. And being a servant means it doesn't have to do with you. Serve Him. Because you belong to Him. I belong to Him and not to myself. Really nothing to do with me. I don't have to be motivated, I don't have to be interested, etc. I'll just conclude, yeah? Yeah. Interesting. Now, one may ask, in summation, but why? Why is this important? Now, the Rebbe says it's very important not to only have Ava. So, on the most basic level, what we said might have sufficed. Because if one only has Ava, only love, and no Yira, it's very easy to fall when you're not in the mood of it, when you don't love. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe once said in Yiddish, it's just the Yiddish one-liners have it all in them. He says, Ava is geschmacker, aber Yira is gesinter. You know, love is much more delightful, but awe is much healthier. Love is very powerful and lovely, but that's its problem. When it's not there, it's gone. Awe is consistent. It's immutable. So that's level A, why it's so important. Level B, Chassidus discusses, people who only have love usually disregard the details. They do more than what you asked for, but what you asked for, they don't do. You know, much more, a lot more. A guy who has Yira, he doesn't do more, but he does exactly. You know, there are different types of employees. There are employees you get very well along with. But since they love you, so they're like involved in the planning and in the process, so they do everything besides what you wanted. A person of you, there's a distance. There's a certain distance. It's not me. So I mix out from everything. I'm not a child. I'm a servant. I'm not a child. And when you mix out of everything, so when you ask to do something, you do it exactly that way. I mean, you see today also there are Jews who redefine Judaism, that Yiddishkeit is only about love. There are certain movements in Yiddishkeit that emphasize only love. Love, love, love. Never Yira, never Awe. And I believe that it's almost readily observable that there's a very big problem with that. Because the moment there is no love, and there's never always love, the spirituality can die fast. And even when there is, details are never important. You know, it's the feeling, it's the passion, it's the empathy, and so forth. But, truth be told, this is not what the Alter Rebbe is saying here. This is true. It says this is not what the Alter Rebbe is saying here. Because the Alter Rebbe started this perek that one needs Yira not only for Sur Meira, but even for Asei Toif. You need Awe not just for eliminating transgressions, but also for positive mitzvahs. In other words, the Alter Rebbe is saying that even a Jew who has Yira in his life, and that's what's keeping him away from transgressions, for the positive mitzvahs he needs love, for tefillin, for tzitzis. And so forth. Because what Alter Rebbe is saying is that every mitzvah I do has to entail an element of serving Hashem. And the only way I can serve Hashem through a mitzvah is when I fear Hashem, when I accept His yoke. And in other words, when I go to Daven Ma'ariv, even if I'm in a good mood and I want to Daven Ma'ariv, Alter Rebbe says it's not enough. Because then the Ma'ariv will not be serving Hashem. It will be relating to Hashem, but it will be serving me. It will be serving Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson or whoever the character is. Even if at the moment Zagdal to Eben Pedek Mal, before I daven Ma'ariv, I have to meditate about the fact that Hashem is my king and I'm his servant. And then the Ma'ariv is serving Hashem. And the reason for this is, you see in the Zohar it says, only here can you have a revelation of holiness. Because ultimately the eye of the creature cannot become a vessel for a relationship with infinity, and Hashem is infinity. And it's in the sense of the loss of the eye where there can be a real relationship with holiness. I mean, parenthetically, the Alter Rebbe doesn't say this, but I would venture to say, since we know that everything in this world and all relationships are ultimately parables for the relationship of a Jew with Hashem, that perhaps also in many other relationships, marriage and so forth, perhaps also reishis ha'avodah v'ikra v'sharsha is not just my mood, my feeling, but my obligation. I just want to conclude with two verter. It's already late. Whoa. I guess an Eved also doesn't go overtime. Just like he doesn't oversleep, he also doesn't go overtime. I confess.
I'll let you put your eyes on this one. Our eyes
are too. You know, the Eved can't explain himself as well as we just explained the Eved. I mean, this is the sophisticated way of explaining an Eved. The whole point of an Eved is that he's not so sophisticated. You know, if he understands the mila of the Eved, is Shinish Kenevet. Right? The Eved is precisely when I don't get it, when I'm not in the mood of it, when the Eved comes to save you when you're in an unsophisticated and unspiritual moment. You know, that's V'atayra Amr, to serve Hashem. I don't have to be there. I don't have to be present there. Let me conclude with two verter. A, This is how the Baal Shem Tov Chassidus interprets the enigmatic Gemara, the famous Gemara Shabbos Peches. Vayisyatzvu betachtis sahar kafa kadosh baruch aleim har kegigus. The Gemara says that during Matan Torah, Hashem took the mountain and He placed it over the Jewish people like a dome, like a kippah, like a turned over vat, like a turned over barrel. And He told them, if you accept the Torah, fine. If not, this shall be the place of your burial. I mean, officially, Yom Chasunase Zem Matan Torah. This is the day of the marriage. Imagine a shidduch is created. The chassan goes over to the kali. He says, I want to propose. He takes a mountain over her head. If you marry me, fine. If not, this will be the place of your burial. I mean, vasir upon him at a shidduch. I mean, what type of relationship is this supposed to be? It's a very difficult gemara to understand. I mean, it's very non-befitting, to put it mildly. It's quite disgusting. And so Tosfos puts the question differently. Tosfos says it's even worse. The Jews already said Nasa v'nishma. The Jews said we'll do it. So Tosfos answers what Tosfos answers. Tosfos answers Hashem was scared that once they're going to see the fire on Har Sinai, they're going to regret it. So the commentators say, even if that's true, so let Hashem wait till they regret it, and then He'll put the mountain over their head. But you have to do something even before they regret it, because I know they might regret it. In fact, they didn't regret it. So there are various interpretations. You know, everything in Torah has many answers. Pshat, Remez, Drushon, on the literal level, on a homiletical level, on a mystical level, and so forth. Well, Remez is associative connections and allusions and so forth. The Drush are more homiletics, and Sod is the esoteric level. So Tosfos gives us the literal answer. There's an answer in different Svarim. I remember that that's an interesting answer. It's actually based on a Medrash Rabbah and Shmais, I think Parshat Tzadik Vav, that Hashem wanted to create the relationship of a Ma'anes, not of a Mafata, which means in Torah law, there is the horrible situation when somebody forces a woman to have a relationship with him, and if, besides having to have to pay a large sum of money, if she wants, she can force him to remain married with him. So by doing this, Hashem, so to speak, forced Himself to remain connected to the Jews forever. The Maharal in Tiferes Yisrael, Perek Lamed Beis, gives another very fabulous answer. This is the other one was Remez. This is perhaps Aldera Chadrush, if we want to go through the four levels. The Maharal says a brilliant idea. The Maharal says Torah is the essence of existence. Torah is the source of creation. Torah is the raison d'etre, the ultimate purpose and objective of all existence. So reality could not allow and afford a situation where it should seem that there is a choice whether the Torah will be received by the Jewish people, whether the Torah will not be received. Torah is intrinsic to the chemistry of existence. It can only come about in a way that it's absolutely necessary. There's no choice, even though Hashem knew they want it. But it had to come about in a way that there's no other possibility, because this is inherent to creation. But then there's a voice from the Baal Shem Tov. And the voice from the Baal Shem Tov echoes the message that the Rebbe is saying here in Tanya. This is quoted in Ben Peres Yosef and Parshas Vayeshev. The Baal Shem Tov says, the moment Hashem took the mountain and placed it over the Jewish people like the dome, you know what he was telling a Yid? Our relationship is not dependent upon you being in the mood of it, upon you wanting it, you gravitating to it, you desiring it. Even when you're unmotivated and you're not interested and you say, no, I'm not interested. We are connected. We are essentially connected. There He imbued the power to a Jew that at every single moment of his life, even when if he feels like a physical, vulgar beast, totally detached from spirituality and godliness, and he says, no, but I'm Hashem. He says no to his craving, no to his lust. He says, but I'm a servant of Hashem. And therefore I'm going to serve Hashem because I belong to Him and I have to serve Him. That power and relationship was established during the time of Torah. During the time of Matan Torah.
But it goes against the
It goes, that's what I said, by people, slavery is something that's extremely negative. Hashem, when I mentioned before, you contemplate who you are and what Hashem is, especially without the Rebbe explaining Tanya, how Hashem creates us at every moment, and that's the only reality of our being. Being in heaven is quite natural in the ultimate scheme. Now, there was once, this is a little story, there was once a Jew who owned a laundromat, a laundromat and a dry cleaners. He owned the cleaners and a laundromat. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Perel, and he was struggling, I should say, in the this is the early 50s, like many American Jews, with his Judaism, with his spirituality, with his Torah, with his mitzvahs, and so forth. And somehow, somewhere, he wrote a letter to the Rebbe, to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the Rebbe responded to him, not on the question, but he wrote to him that the Baal Shem Tov said that everything in life is a spiritual lesson. So a laundromat and a dry cleaners, which we encounter so frequently, also has a lot of spiritual lessons to it. And he writes a Yiddish letter, letter written in Yiddish, in the volume 4 of his letters, that a garment, when you buy it or you purchase it in the store, is clean, it's uncreased, it's straight, it's ironed, totally pressed, and it fits you beautifully. Problem is, when you wear it for a while, even if you treat it very well, but it becomes creased, bent and creased. Worse, it can get dusty. Worse, it can get stained and dirty. Lest you think there's no hope for the garment, no. You give it to a laundromat, you give it into a dry cleaner. The first thing they do is they put it into a machine that has heat. There's heat there. But not just heat, water. So there's a hot moisture. Then they mix in some other chemicals, soap and other cleansing chemicals. They clean it. But if you give it right now back to the wearer, it's still not good. It's totally clean. The stains are removed. The dust is removed and so forth. But you still can't wear it. It's totally not like new. The last thing you have to do is you have to take an iron. You have to press a weight on it. You press the weight on it. This totally removes the creases. And it's as good as new. It's as fresh as new. So the Rebbe said the soul comes down like a new garment. Soul is not creased, it's not dented, it's not stained, it's lovely, it's pure, it's sparkling, it's godly, the soul of a little child, a little infant. You know, the moment an infant is born, it's just the purity of the soul is a very profound experience, whoever experienced it in their life, that sense of purity. You know, there's no baggage, no garbage, nothing, not one word of gossip was yet heard by the child. But living in this world, the first thing is a lot of creases, just from excessive materialism. And then there are there's the dust, and then there are the stains, which are already abusive to the soul. So every morning we say Neshama Shenasata B'Tahiri, it was pure, but then ultimately dust assembles upon it. So there's no lost hope. Give it into the laundromat or the dry cleaners. Put it into heat. It should experience the warmth of Yiddishkeit, the warmth of Torah, the warmth of mitzvahs. The water and the moisture of a heitzike davening, shivchi chamayim libech, pouring out your heart like water. The water of Torah, in mayim ala Torah, Torah is compared to water. And then put in some soap and other chemicals, he wrote to them, start eating kosher, give tzedakah, do other mitzvahs. But that's still not enough. You still can't wear your soul. The soul is still not what it is. Because then the last thing is, you have to take an iron and press down a weight on it. You have to place the yoke of Hashem onto this human being's life. I am Hashem's servant. I don't belong to myself. And then the neshama becomes as good as new. Have a good night and a wonderful week.
To order additional MP3 CDs, Call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is C-H-A-S-S-I-D-U-S.com.